Good morning, good evening, and good afternoon. Hope everybody's doing great. Welcome to another edition of The War Room here on KLKC. I am your host, Sean Fry. Today's guest is Chet Kuplin, the owner and founder of Sports in Kansas, one of the state's premier sports coverage websites for high school sports all around the state. Him and I got together at a baseball combine in Pittsburgh over the weekend. Saw some great talent there, and we sat down for an interview. You want to see the full interview, head online, but I'll give you a snippet of it here on the radio today. Just a quick thoughts on the previous week. Obviously, big news on the SEK side. You had the SEK League Championship on the girls' side basically wrapped up by Labette County. They secured a share of it with a win over Pittsburgh and Chanute beating Independence. If Labette County wins either of their next three games this week, which they haven't lost a league game yet, and they play Chanute, Independence, and Coffeyville, they'll secure the outright league title. This is the sixth time in the last 7 years that the Labette County girls have won an SEK League Championship. Christy Snyder just has that program rolling, and it is fun to watch. They play a physical, defensive brand of basketball. They're never going to be outworked, and they are a dangerous team to play. Big week in basketball this week after all the cancellations we saw because of the winter storm last week. Hope everybody stayed safe. Hope everybody stayed warm, because strap it in this week. We have nonstop action across the state for basketball. State wrestling seedings are determined. College sports starting to rev up. I've got college softball to watch this week, so we'll see how that goes. Big week in sports coming up. Particularly with postseason basketball in the high school ranks just around the corner. Again, today's guest is Chet Kuplin, host of and owner of Sports in Kansas, also host of one of the best radio shows here on this station on the FM side. Don't go anywhere when we come back. Chet Kuplin of Sports in Kansas. And we're back here on the War Room here on KOKC. I'm your host, Sean Fry, and I am joined by a lot of people say I'm a great radio host here on KOKC, but the best sports radio host here on KOKC is my guest today, Sports in Kansas founder and owner and mogul, Chet Kuplin. Chet, how's it going, man?
Going good, and great to be here with you today and talk some high school sports, some local sports during a weird year, to say the least. But I think we got to be pretty thankful and happy that we got a sports season this year, so of course we're getting ready to get in the thick of, you know, sub-state tournaments, things like that coming up, and of course baseball season coming up here soon.
Don't remind
me. As well as track and all that. I mean, you're working nonstop out here doing all the stuff with Labette Community College, and then you got all the stuff locally, and then all the spring stuff coming up. So knock on wood, hopefully we're gonna have state champions this year in basketball.
Yeah.
Also knock on wood that we're gonna actually have a spring sports season this year, because Sean, we were talking, you know, at the combine this weekend, you know, we've not, you know, we were covering baseball, and we've not crowned a state baseball champion since 2019.
I know.
We were talking about track and field athletes and some of them coming back within this area. We've not had any state track and field champions since 2019. We've not had a state basketball champion. Heck, Girard's a repeat champion, not a repeat, you know,
defending champion,
and three of they've already went to 4A last year, didn't get to play because of course, you know, they did, but other teams, you know, Forever Four, Final Four, whatever you want to call it, canceled. So I'm looking forward to crowning some champions, because the last champions that we had this time of the year were wrestling last year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just been – time has – it's slowed, and yet it's fast at the same time, if that makes sense. Like, you know, it seemed like the first few months after COVID hit just dragged on and on and on. But kind of once I hit that fall season, oh, it just started flying. And – now all of a sudden we're deep into basketball season. We're nearing the basketball postseason. All of a sudden it's been a year, and you're like, wow. And you look back on the year that we had, and I got to admit, a lot of times I struggle with what the year has looked like at times. I mean, let's just go back to the past week. I mean, not only do COVID cancellations continue to be an issue, which, by the way, numbers are down around the state in terms of case-wide numbers, and that has a lot to do with continued health and safety protocols, adherence to that, and as well as vaccine distribution starting to ramp up a little bit. But just the storm, the winter weather, particularly in Southeast Kansas, we've got over the last 2 weeks. I only covered one game, or two games if you count boys and girls, which you do. But I've only covered one date in the last, like, 10 days. And it's
And it's been, and now all of a sudden we're about a week away from sub-state, and you have teams trying to cram in games. I mean, we want to see champions crowned. That's great. Let's see how we get through the rest of this year, though. I've got teams that are playing five games between now and Saturday, and it's gonna be a wild and woolly ride to the finish here.
It absolutely is. I was talking to Coach Houck on radio last week, and I think that he mentioned that they played like one game or something in the last three weeks or month or whatever that it was. It was something crazy like that. And that's a lot of teams across the state. And not only that, you may not be playing with your whole team because you have people in quarantine, things like that. So that's the common theme. You know, we deal with this a lot in spring sports, things like that, baseball, softball, rescheduling. But now all of a sudden you add in, of course, the COVID factor, weather factor on top of that in the spring or the winter sports right now. I can't imagine what spring sports are going to go on, and if it's still going to be a problem, knock on wood, hopefully it's not April, May. I still think it's going to be, but, you know, we talk about making up games, stuff like that in the spring. I think we're going to have the same thing going on for quite some time, and it's hard enough to get in games as it is with weather, but now you add in another factor of, you know, we saw a four-man football game this year in Kansas. They play six-man football. Think about how tired you'd be in four-man football.
Gosh.
Didn't have enough to play that. You know, you're covering eight-man football and think that's least. Well, there's six-man football in Kansas, and they had to play four-man in a game this year. And
where was that at? I didn't even hear about
Pawnee,
that.
Pawnee Heights High School, Roselle, Kansas, the home of Horned Frog head football coach TCU Gary Patterson. Population 160 people in that town, and they played four-man football this year in a game. I want to say it was against Cunningham. I may be wrong on that. But the other team, you know, they had seven, eight players, but they still wanted to play. There were only four players available for Pawnee Heights, so they suited up and they played some four-man football this year.
Was it 4-on-6 or their opponent?
No, it was 4-on-4. It was four-man football. I mean, that's like backyard football. I mean, you know, we're half of that four-man football team right now, you and I, two people. So, I mean, I guess you could take a Ford Focus to an away game if you had four people.
I would have loved to see the film on that. So, obviously, there would have been a center and a quarterback and then just two wideouts, I'm guessing?
I guess. I mean, I've not watched a lot of six-man football. We cover it in Kansas. It's not Keisha-recognized.
Yeah, it's not a sanctioned Keisha school.
But we cover it. You know, we do the player of the year, and I've spoken at some six-man high schools and things like that. And, you know, the way I see it, you know, schools come in all shapes and sizes, and just because they're six-man doesn't mean that we're not going to cover it. Football's football, and athletes are athletes, and we're still going to highlight it if we can. But seeing four-man this year, it was a little bit weird. So imagine all of a sudden if you're on that, if it's 4-on-4 and one dude's like 240 pounds, 6'1", runs a 4.640. I mean, good luck.
And I think, you know, there's been a lot of oddities this year. And I think it's provided a lot of opportunity. You know, a lot of coaches always love to preach the cliche of, you know, we've got to build depth. We've got to build depth. It's always next man up. It's next man up. Be ready for your opportunity. That was really the case this year because you may have been buried. I'm sure there are teams out there where a girl or a guy was buried on the JV roster on a Monday, and then on a Tuesday, they're starting varsity. And you better be ready because you're expected to go out there and compete for a win. And, you know, the cost of the pandemic aside, and you can't put that aside because of the cost of life and the economic downturn that it all costs. Nobody's ever going to discount any of that. There were opportunities that I think because of this pandemic, and I think, you know, some kids got opportunities they didn't get a chance to before, and I think it forced coaches to evolve in a lot of ways too that they hadn't been forced to in a while, and it forced society to evolve in a lot of ways we hadn't been forced to in a while. And it's been interesting to see that evolve on the evolution on the athletic side. I think it's forced coaches to be okay with not following a rigid schedule. How many coaches do you say, you know, the cliche about coaches is they're creatures of habit. Well, you can't be a creature of habit and be successful over the last year. If you're a creature of habit, there's been too many disruptions. And I'm sure we're all that to an extent, but I mean, you can probably speak on how you've seen coaches adapt all throughout the state. I've certainly seen it in Southeast Kansas.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think you're right. It has provided a lot of opportunity. I'll get into that in talking about depth, but being in athletics, working in college athletics, working with coaches now, of course, you know, at the high school ranks and things like that, coaches are planners, athletic directors are planners, and this is a year that we can't plan. Everybody wants to be on a schedule, and everybody wants to know their starting roster and who's playing, and we always have to account for injuries. But we don't account for somebody coming on the bus and saying, hey, there's a positive test. Six people can't travel with you to Fort Scott tonight.
Yeah.
And that's happened this year. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, three of them played the same position. So now we got a four-string guy that's a freshman coming in. And that has not just happened here locally in Southeast Kansas or statewide. It's happened everywhere.
Everywhere in the country.
Kansas State football. They're playing threes and fours this year.
Yeah.
I mean, an injury for Skylar Thompson out, but COVID reasons force other people out, an offensive line unit, a wide receiver unit. We saw threes and fours walk-ons playing because
and that's I mean that's
what is enough depth, and depth was exposed at certain places that didn't have a lot of depth, and that's certainly why we saw that. So I think that was a factor, and we just can't plan for anything in this day and age of what's going on, of course, with that. So I think that COVID obviously a factor in that, but I think the advantage, if there is one advantage of it, if there's one advantage moving forward and talking about teams, it's players got on the field this year that in no way, shape, or form would have ever gotten the field. I mean, we're talking guys at Kansas State got to play this year. I bet there's more varsity high school letters this year than any year in the history ever, because we got freshmen that are starting for some programs out there that would have never played till they were junior.
You got because you got to.
You have to.
Yeah, and God bless them for it. And, I mean, you know, it's funny you mentioned K-State football from back in the fall. You know, K-State was a team that beat Oklahoma to start the year, but then got walloped by Iowa State. Those were two different teams that you saw out there. And so, honestly, you know, how does that translate to the high school level? Well, I think the teams that could, one, adhere to the guidelines as best as they could. You know, I always said from the start, adhering to the guidelines, wearing a mask is going to give you a competitive advantage.
Absolutely.
Because at some point down the road, you're going to face a team, or you're going to be scheduled to play a team that maybe they'll beat you, or maybe they're a little better than you, or maybe it's going to be a close game, and that's going to decide a league championship. And all of a sudden, they're going to get COVIDed out, and all of a sudden, you're not going to be granted the win, but now you get to move past that stage of your season. And I'm not saying teams would ever intentionally do that, but staying healthy and following those guidelines gave you a competitive advantage, and it keeps you on the floor longer. That's why the LeBet County girls, who are super stringent about it all, that's why their volleyball team won the league title, and I think that's why their basketball team just secured a league title. And, you know, Chrissy Snyder is all about, we talk about the lack of planning and the lack of consistency. You can always manufacture routine, though, through ever-changing circumstances. And I saw Chrissy Snyder do that to the absolute best, is through ever-changing schedule and routine and not being and just not knowing what the next day held. She knew she had to create some sort of consistency and some sort of bedrock to lay her foundation of her program on this year. And she did that with adherence to guidelines. She did that with academics, and she did that with the continued identity of her program. That's why they've won now six of the last seven SEK league titles. Man, that team's just always quietly good. LeBet County girls, they just...
And they have so many, you know, outside of, you know, the Tristan Gag days and the girl that went to Bemidji State, of course, some stars there, but they've got it done for a lot of years with not a lot of stars sometimes, just everybody contributing. And I think that factors in with consistency. Even if you miss a couple people due to COVID, it's not one star, so it's everybody showing up. And I think we've seen that all of a sudden, you know, this year. I think that's why it's maybe surprised some people with Parsons High School basketball team at time, because they're not relying on one star.
No.
They're relying on several people. Now, last year they had four stars on their team. So, I mean, four players that are once, you know, or three players who were once in 20-year players on the team. And, of course, a height of, you know, 6'7", Pierce Thomas on the team. Well, all of a sudden you see, you know, one star they really relied upon to bring the ball down the court. And you see when he's hurt. Now, imagine if he's pulled off the bus because of COVID. It wasn't COVID. It was a knee injury in 2020, and that was Derek Williams. And that derailed the whole season, even though if they would have won, it would have got canceled the next game. But the whole idea is, you know, that's what we've seen with teams this year, of a star player going down, not just because of injury, because of quarantine and things like that. Some of that may have not even gotten COVID. Somebody's sitting next to somebody in a seating chart.
Yeah.
Season over. And I think that's maybe the hardest thing for a lot of the kids out there.
That was one thing that Anthony Howard talked to me about in the beginning of the season that he was harping on with his players, was try not to sit next to anybody in class, because we can't have healthy people sitting at home. You can't have someone who's not who's just being quarantined out because of contact tracing, which is the right thing by the health department. These are the right steps to be taken. But, you know, if you want to avoid that, you know, avoid sitting next to people, and you don't want healthy people out. And that's, you know, I feel like the healthiest programs have been the coaches and players that have been able to adapt to everything. One thing, you know, I brought you on the show, Chet, and one thing I wanted to directly ask you about is when, I think the first time you were on my show, this was right when COVID hit, and I think you and I had real fears about what our job security looked like down the road. And, you know, that fear is compounded, you know, infinitely for you because you own your own business. You know, if I get laid off from my job at the Parsons Sun, I don't lose a business. That is, you know, that's something that, you know, I surround my identity on. I'm curious how, you know, so we're almost at the year point now, how sports in Kansas has survived kind of from that fiscal standpoint.
Yeah, you know, I get asked a lot of this in school presentations. What's been the hardest thing about your job over the last 9 years of what you do? And I said, running sports in Kansas without sports in Kansas, which I had to do for a long time until I was just hoping and praying that the Shrine Bowl went well and we got high school football, because we exist off of advertising. You know, we have to have live streams. We have to have Kansas Football Friday on. We have to have events going on. We have to have sports to give all state teams letter jacket patches, things like that that we sell, that we operate on. We have to be, you know, covering sports on local radio to sell advertising. So, you know, how do you run sports in Kansas without sports in Kansas? Well, we had to do that for 6 months. And terrifying, you know, being the owner, CEO, and paying people, things like that. But the thing that I would mention, and of course you've kind of already talked about it, is adapting. Mm-hmm. Thinking outside of the box, thinking of other ways to make money. You know, for us, you know, we did some apparel stuff, we did some t-shirt stuff, you know, football evaluations. We still got at some camps and some combines.
Yeah.
If anything,
that combine was probably a big breath that to take in that summer when you guys held it.
Absolutely. And not only that, you know, just different things of, you know, one thing I've noticed, you know, we recruit now in Zoom. You know, I sat in on a D1 coaches meeting last week and saw how they recruited D1 athletes through Zoom and things like that. We do shows through Zoom. The way we, you know, we've been doing stuff remotely over the phone, Skype, all that stuff for years. But now the way that these kids are being recruited, the NCAA can't recruit these kids in person until May 31st of this year. So everything, you know, it's kind of benefited being in the online world like I am, because I am kind of that liaison connection in between a coach for football specifically, not other sports necessarily. Those are more club level driven. But all of a sudden, these kids are looking for an outlet where they can't go to a campus and work out because we can't have events at campus or K-State camps, things like that. So all of a sudden, well, how does a kid get found? Well, hopefully they have a huddle highlight. Hopefully they have a way to be evaluated. Hopefully they get to a camp and a combine that obviously isn't going to be at a campus, things like that. So people have had to think outside of the box, get creative, things like that. My biggest fear is for kids in 2021, 2022 that aren't going to have scholarship opportunities because of what we've talked a lot about, of kids being in the class of, you know, right now, senior in college, coming back for a sixth year, coming back for a fifth year. You got Skylar Thompson at Kansas State coming back, sixth year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if in a normal year he's done, all of a sudden, well, we're going to recruit one less quarterback because Skylar gets another year. Mm-hmm. That's the landscape of sports everywhere. I mean, you cover at the JUCO level.
Yeah.
There's no eligibility being used this year.
I think at the JUCO level, it's an interesting dilemma, and you almost wonder if all the factors that are new going into this year when it comes to recruiting, specifically at the junior college level, all become kind of a wash and end up not having a big effect one way or the other. And I think part of that is, so junior colleges, particularly in Kansas, they're not offering full rides. They're not going to pay for everything on there. So So let's just take the kid, and I'll just use the example of let's take a softball player at Labette Community College. And let's say they're a freshman academically or a freshman eligibility wise right now. Most of those freshmen are sophomores, taking sophomore level classes at Labette for their softball team right now. I don't know how many sophomores are on that roster. It's something like a dozen, maybe
some
more.
Of them could actually be a freshman this year that played last year.
Yes.
And they play next year, so they could be at a community
that three-year college freshman
for four years if they really wanted to be.
Yeah, but the reason I don't see hardly any of those girls, or I don't envision any of those girls or guys on the basketball team or anything like that going beyond 2 years, maybe two and a half, like maybe volleyball gets lucky and a few of those sophomores stick around for an extra fall, but it's because they're not going to pay for classes they don't need. They're not going to pay for classes and for tuition and for room and board that they don't need academically, so they can stick around and play JUCO. So they'll go find a 4-year opportunity somewhere, or they may just call it quits. And let's just be real: a lot of junior college athletes, that's the end of the road for them. They play their 2 years, and that's it. That's probably the case for, I would imagine, you know, it runs the gamut at Labette. I think the baseball and softball teams probably run your average, and I'm looking at about maybe half their classes advanced to the four-year level. The women's basketball team has everybody go, but that's because they're the number one team in the country right now. And the men's basketball team and wrestling team don't send as many, but that's because I think they struggle a little more at times. So I think, you know, for one, for those kids that was always going to be into the road, I don't think it has an effect. They may want to stay maybe one extra year, but, you know, it's an interesting conundrum. And I think where the JUCO kids suffer is when they're trying to go to 4 years, because 4 years aren't going to have space for them. Because a place like, even a place like Pitt State, they can cover most, if not all, your expenses. They can cover most of your expenses through their scholarships and hold you. Tristan Gegg's a great example. She was on my show a couple weeks ago. And she's talking to me about how I'm going to use that extra year I'm getting now, stay on for one more season, and I'm going to use it to get to either start or finish and or finish my postgrad.
And of course, you're going to keep her. She's averaging what, 17 points per game?
Yeah. So and then from Pitt State, just like you said, Pitt State doesn't need it. Okay, that's another 2 years they don't need a shooting guard.
Yep. From high school or JUCO.
Yeah. So
Other thing that I do want to throw in with JUCO, though, all of a sudden you got some, you know, really good baseball players over the years, no matter what the year is at Neosho Community College. Well, you've got a guy that played all last year, let's say in 2020. Not all last year. He played half last year. And then, again, he's a freshman this year. And, you know, he's going to have his 60 hours, whatever it is, at JUCO. And he's not going to use eligibility this year. So when a college recruiter comes around as a D2 program, let's say Pittsburgh State Baseball, for example, they have 2 years of JUCO stats on a kid. Or they have 4A, 3A stats on a kid from Southeast Kansas in high school. I'm probably going to go after that JUCO kid that has 4 years of eligibility that's already played 2 years to play for me, that I know that he can hit in the Jayhawk Conference. So that becomes the problem. It's terrible for 2022s and 2021 kids. There's going to be a lot of kids that are good athletes that there's not going to be any roster space for.
I think it changes the trajectory, but I still think kids will find a home. I think there will be there. And part of, like, what the NJCAA is doing is, you know, they're inflating scholarship counts and stuff like that. You're allowed to hold bigger rosters. And so I think there will be a place for them. It certainly will change the trajectory for a lot, but I think it's...
And now I think we have 1,600 kids in the Division I transfer portal for football this year. It's like there's nowhere for these kids to go.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Where are you going? That's one thing I've always wondered, is transferring.
So, like, D2 and stuff, like some of the players that the D2 signed this year in Kansas in football, unbelievable, because
they did not have opportunities. They're normally D1 talent.
They're D1 talent that did not get to get on campus and work out, or did not get to get to a camp or combine, or did not have enough scholarships because somebody came back.
That's one thing that is, there's kind of a belief of, is over the next 2 years, it's going to be this artificial, not necessarily artificial, but this temporary inflation at NCAA, D2, and JUCOs. All of a sudden, you're going to see those teams just play better, almost across the board. The talent's going to be better because you have better kids that can't go D1 right now. Speaking about recruiting, this will be the last thing we talk about, Chet, is we were just at a combine where a lot of kids at a baseball combine, you and I were working at it on Saturday, where a lot of kids are looking for that next opportunity or trying to work towards it. And we were just talking a lot about junior colleges. I think the Jayhawk Conference in Kansas, at least among Kansans, gets a bit of a bad rap. I think a lot of kids, you know, and a lot of parents don't want to say, oh, my kid's only playing JUCO, if they spent the time to bring their kid to the combine. Whereas I will tell anybody that will listen to me, and I'll scream it to the high heavens, go walk on at a Kansas Jayhawk Conference JUCO before you go to an NAIA school 9 times out of 10. Now, if the NAIA genuinely wants to pay you a full ride to come play for them, and you think it fits your academic profile, and you think that, and you like the competition you'll play there, then go. Then that's fine. But a lot of NAIAs, particularly in Kansas, are extremely high tuition. They're private universities where tuition can run up of $40K, and the Jayhawk Conference is going to provide you with equal or better level of competition. The Jayhawk Conference is widely revered nationwide as one of the best college athletic conferences, regardless of governing body. And I'm curious, you know, that's a bit of a rant on me. What's your message to kids who maybe are weary of a JUCO route, or what's your overarching message to kids looking to get recruited to that next level?
Yeah, I think the JUCO route is a great opportunity. I think it's an underrated opportunity. Financially speaking, where, you know, that's a great opportunity, because in some way, you know, it's books and tuition. For some, it could be a full ride depending on the situation. But, you're going to go knock 2 years, you know, out of school for free almost, mm-hmm. and then get 2 years almost immediate playing, whereas maybe, I don't know necessarily, I'm not going to speak down on other levels, but maybe you go somewhere else and you might have to sit 2 or 3 years before you get out on the field. Whereas you go somewhere and you can maybe figure out what your potential is and you get instant competition between freshman, sophomore, and then, hey, maybe we weren't really ready to play D2 or D1 yet. And the majority of the people that I know, specifically talking about football or baseball, they've had their opportunity because they went to the JUCO ranks.
Yeah.
Only because they went to the JUCO ranks. Because let's face it, there's only probably about 10 to 15, maybe at the most, FBS football players offers, four-eyed kids, in Kansas per year. You know, not everybody's going to be an Easton Dean or a Landon Dean or somebody like that. You know, you might be a Moose Green who has to go to, you know, Fort Scott for 2 years, or a Sean Hill that has to go to Hutch JUCO for 2 years. Yeah. Whatever the story may be.
You might be an Audrey Miller who is fifth in batting average at Tonganoxie High School for a team that finished fourth in state, goes to LeBette Community College for a year, and ends up and gets her swing right under Ryan Phillips and becomes an All-American softball catcher, and all of a sudden gets her offer at Pitt State after nobody else would touch her.
Yep.
Because she had a knee injury.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good way, like I said, immediately getting experience, maybe getting adapted to the weight room or just college life in general. You know, get some of that, you know, all those classes that are hard somewhere else in a way, those general education classes, and get those out of the way. So I think JUCO is a great opportunity for a lot of kids. There's great opportunities everywhere. And I'm not down on NAIs and stuff like that. I get some schools are expensive, more expensive than others. There are private schools out there, the NCAA, that are more expensive than others. And I think that's where we get carried away sometimes at NCAA, you know, baseball, softball. We don't realize in football, Division I, it's all or nothing FBS.
Yep.
It's either all, you know, you walk on or you pay your way. FCS, I believe they have to offer a certain percentage, 75% or whatever that it is. And, of course, D2, they have 36 scholarships. Those 36 can be broken upon any way that they want for football. And, of course, you know, we talk about baseball, softball, things like that. They have 11.7 scholarships in Division I baseball that can only be broken upon 27 guys. So you could have a .25 offer. Think about if you're going to, let's say, New Orleans University D1.
Yeah.
I don't know what that costs a year, but I would venture to say it's probably $40,000 to $60,000 a year.
If you're out of state,
a .25 offer, you're still paying 75% of that for 4 years. Mm-hmm. So you got to factor in, you know, if you do, you know, care about, you know, money and things like that, JUCO is absolutely the right route. And heck, Fort Scott High School alone, I think's had 3 or 4 guys D1 in the last 5 years, mm-hmm. either using Neosho Community College or Fort Scott. At Caleb De La Torre, you covered him in high school. Coach De La Torre's son, he starts for South Alabama.
Yep.
And he went to Neosho Community College for free for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Ivan Witt, that's Fort Scott High School. He's at going to go to Creighton next year. He skipped his senior year. He's at Neosho Community College right now. And, you know, there's all kind of guys like that out there. A lot of really cool stories to see that. And I think JUCO's a great route for a lot of kids. And sometimes people, you know, think that, you know, their kid's too good to go to JUCO. It's high level, high level of a lot of stuff going on, specifically in baseball and football.
There are Jayhawk Conference teams that would beat teams in the MIAA.
Yeah, I think. I mean,
maybe not
football with experience and overall depth, but athlete-wise, like,
yes.
We just watched the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
Jason Pierre-Paul, Levante David.
Yep.
You know, both at Fort Scott Community College. You know,
exactly.
Levante David playing against Cam Newton at right out here at Pittsburgh State. Football capital of Kansas Bowl in 2013. Guess who's running back kicks? Not necessarily running back kicks in that game. Guess who's at kick return for Garden City? Guy named Tyreek Hill.
Yep.
So there's some of the best players in the country that come out of that, and anybody that says there's not doesn't know much about JUCO sports.
I would venture to argue, like, LeBette Community College women's basketball team, they're the number one ranked JUCO team in the country right now. There's MIAA teams they would beat.
Yeah, I agree.
I would venture they would give, you know, Pitt State a run for their money. I would venture that would be a competitive game.
Let's make it happen.
Like, we should. I want to so badly to make that happen. I wish that would be an exhibition. But hey, Chet, thanks for coming on the show as always, man. It's always good to hear from you. Good, you have an open invitation to this. I need to have you host my show. Maybe I'll actually get more popular. People don't like me, man.
Well, I appreciate you having me on today. Congrats on the award from Keisha, the Sports Writer of the Year. That's great. I know that's a big-time honor in Kansas, and congratulations on that. That was great to see. And I think what you do for, of course, the small community, the 7-8 schools that you cover is awesome. You know, I do what I do statewide and kind of highlight little things. You go into depth on your specific schools and know the ins and outs. And I do this statewide, and it's awesome to bounce ideas off somebody like you in an area that covers it so close, because I can't even really do that in Pittsburgh because they don't have somebody like that. I can't do that in certain parts of the state because there's not a newspaper there. There's not a TV station there. So maybe we have to rely on their local radio broadcaster that just highlights them on 2 hours on air. So I think that's unique in a way in this digital age where, of course, you're doing radio, you're doing stuff digitally, you're doing stuff in print, previews, things like that. So I really do appreciate that, and congrats on the big award, man.
Thank you. It's a testament to the commitment, you know, my company at the Parson Sun showed me, and it's a it's an honor that is meant for every sports writer in the state who has, you know, like I said in my statement, they muscled through a very difficult year. You were very much a part of that as well. And so, I mean, that's who that award to me honors this year. And I'm glad that, you know, I hope to just represent that the best I can. That'll do it for the War Room here on KLKC. Thank you to Chet Coupland, owner of Sports in Kansas, for coming on the show. Go check out his stuff, as he likes to brag about. He's got a platform that reaches 250,000 people here in the state. Go follow him on Instagram. Go follow him on Twitter. Go read the website. They do great work over there at Sports in Kansas. Even I contribute a little bit. Hopefully it's going to be a good week of basketball. Hopefully everybody stayed warm over a blistering cold week, and hopefully everybody's still alive. We got one more week of regular season basketball, and then it's postseason time, my favorite time of the year. That'll do it. Thanks for listening to the War Room.